Inside Lacrosse Podcast.
Thanks for coming back to the Inside Lacrosse MLL Podcast. I am Terry Boyd, joined by a fired up Kyle Devitt. On the heels of, well, I don't really know what to call it. I guess it was the Team USA Team MLL Showdown, because Kyle, you were very particular to point out that it was not an All-Star game in the run-up to the All-Star game, and I have a feeling you're going to make that same contention now here when you get the opportunity to speak.
Yes, I will.
And so I suppose let's start with being as rational as possible in trying to explain your point of view about what an All-Star game should be and how this particular incarnation fell short.
Okay, so my belief is that the All-Star game should be the best event that the MLL puts on every year. All hands should be on deck. Everyone should be all smiles. Everyone should be ready to go. Okay? Everyone should have 1,000% effort. Not 100, not 200, 1,000% effort. Put their best foot forward. That goes from the commissioner all the way down to the very last intern. This game, we're not even talking about the game yet. This organization of this game was the worst I have ever experienced covering the league in almost a decade. So, A, I'm old. B, that's inexcusable.
Well, you need to provide more evidence or reasons as to why you feel that way.
Okay, here we go. Team USA apparently changed their numbers on the drive to the stadium. Highly dubious about that. We got cards and we got the media guide. Almost every number, I would say 60% of the numbers were wrong. So we don't know who's who because the USA jerseys don't have names in the back. So instead of writing preps and getting our stuff ready as media members, who, by the way, I think there was maybe three to five of us, which is also bad because that means they didn't get anyone else to show up to this game and less people are going to read about it. We didn't have any time. We had to go through the PR director had a updated list on a crumpled up paper that we had to copy the numbers from. Okay, that's not okay. That's not good, you know, and that's like a quibble. That's like inside baseball stuff. And I understand if you don't care about that. I care about that because I like to get everybody the information as fast as possible. You know, that's part of my job covering the game besides, you know, snarky comments and whatnot, you know. Love which I had plenty and still do. The game itself, like the layout was not really explained to us, especially at halftime. So we were first told that fastest shot was up first. And then interns are running over and getting the targets. And we didn't know who was doing the targets. And also 2 days before this game started, I was ready to do trick shot and freestyle, and then I'm told it's not happening. And that didn't happen a week ago. That literally happened 2 days ago. They just took it out. They're like, yeah, we're not going to do it. Like, what's going on? I want to know what's going on with that, because that is the thing that, like, people hate it, and I understand why people hate it, just like people hate the dunk contest. I get it. But that's at least engaging. Like, you get the fans, like, cheering and whatnot. It's not up to what's on a radar gun or how many targets it looks like someone hit or how many pipes someone hit in the accuracy contest. They haven't done the accuracy contest for a while. I don't know why you would choose the accuracy contest.
There was a demonstrated reason for why they hadn't done the accuracy contest for a while.
Exactly. And one of the funny things is I got a bunch of tweets during the game like, I don't get it. The NHL players can hit the targets. Why can't the MLL players hit the targets? And I'm like, I don't have answers for you. I wish I had an answer for that.
Well, there was an answer provided in the post-accuracy competition interview, and it had something to do with not practicing.
Oh, well, if that's the reason for everybody, then, you know, every team is upset because they don't only practice once a week, and some of them don't even get to do that. So that's not a good reason either. I was on the field. Everything was kind of like flying before the game. I was on the field for like half an hour trying to talk to people, get like a feel, and it felt good. Like I thought it was going to be a good game. And then, you know, let's talk about the game.
Well, right. Because you're like, to this point, your criticisms have been I suppose minor, but at the same time, I understand why you started with them because they're the most like able to provide evidence. I think what you're about to talk about is the crux of your dissatisfaction, but ultimately the most difficult to either prove or provide evidence for.
Correct. And listen, I'm just going to go on what, and you know, it's probably my fault because I'm the one that's like, this isn't an all-star game. No one should be ready for an all-star game. And then I'm surprised when I'm right. Because that wasn't an all-star game. That was a controlled scrimmage with Team USA pulling all the strings against basically a hand-picked opponent. Let's be real. There are other people that cover the league. Chris Rosenthal at another site. I don't know if I'm allowed to mention another site.
You can mention other sites. But before you do that, what makes you think it was a hand-picked roster to oppose the...
No. There's no think. I know.
Okay.
I know. Because there's two Canadians on there. They tried to get everybody else. We know this from weeks ago when they announced the thing and they announced the roster and they said that, there was no voting and coaches were like, oh, no one called me.
Well, okay, so here's my point is that, like, Dave Cottle, the coach of the MLL team, was an evaluator at the Team USA game. Like, I suppose I don't know, like, are you arguing that the team was selected in cahoots with the US team, or in direct opposition to what the US team would have wanted to see?
No. I'm sure the Team USA would have loved to have seen the entire Canadian team, and I know that a bunch of Canadians that haven't even played in the league, for example, Jeff Snyder, said no. So that makes sense. Junior said no. You know, I know this because it was told to us on the call by Cottle. And when I brought up the selection process to other coaches and naming names, Tucker from Boston, Tucker's like, well, I wasn't involved in that. Why wasn't a coach from the league involved in that process? If you're going to pick a quote unquote all-star team, and listen, they picked guys that at least had chips on their shoulders, wanted to play hard and wanted to go at the Team USA like they had something to prove. And guys like Danowski and Walters certainly did that. Like they had very good games and proved their point that maybe they should have been considered, or, you know, they were upset that they got cut early in the process, or, I mean, Walters didn't even apply because he didn't think it was worth it. But he also believes in himself and as a player. So my whole thing is, like, it's not an all-star team. It's a Team MLL picked of guys who agreed to go, which,
well,
okay.
Okay, like, if you're making that claim, you're also kind of disputing what the MLL All-Star Game is every year, and truthfully what every All-Star Game is. How frequently do Major League Baseball players get picked for their All-Star Game and not, you know, either show up and don't play or miss the game due to injury altogether? You know, it frequently happens in the NBA as well. So it's kind of the nature of an All-Star Game. But I still think that you're getting lost in the trees when, in my interpretation of your comments, and I don't... It's weird because I'm not certain that I totally agree with you, but correct me if I'm wrong. This is the crux of your issue. All-Star Games should be... They basically shouldn't have coaches. And this was an event. This was an exhibition that was too heavily coached for your taste. Is that a fair distillation of what you're trying to say?
All-Star Games are not for coaches. They are for players and fans. Period. And that was taken away from this experience for everybody involved. And that is the crux of my issue. So yes, I would agree with that as the crux of my issue. And
so answer me this. Would you have had nearly the problem that you had with last night if there was an additional All-Star game scheduled at a different point this season?
No.
Because then, so it's really the the nominal nature of it being an all-star game that bothers you the most. However, as you already acknowledged, like,
yes,
you knew that it wasn't going to be an all-star game going into this, and the MLL did a mediocre but not terrible job of trying to make that clear. Like, they named it the all-star game and they had commercials on broadcast all throughout the season saying that, So right. That's not a good job. But Dave Cottle was very clear that this was not an MLL All-Star team. It was Team MLL. So, you know, it's not as if they didn't, it's not as if they totally obfuscated it.
I will say this. If this is what they wanted to do, why didn't they just get all these MLL guys down to Team USA training camp and film it behind closed doors? Like, why do I have to watch it? Cause I didn't like it.
Well,
I liked the fourth quarter. The fourth quarter felt like a game.
I liked it. I liked it from the prospect of, in idea, I liked it from the prospect of taking a look at these 31 players and trying to determine if I were in the coach's positions, who would I select? In practice, and this is what I want to get to, that job is way more difficult than it was before the game even started. But I'll get to that in a second. I want to let you finish your rant, but you do need to bring this thing in for a landing because we're going on 12 minutes at this point.
All right, fine. Listen, it was, I don't want to see the best. This is the end of what I'm going to say. I don't want to see the best players in the world, U.S., Canadian, whatever nationality. I don't care. I don't want to see the best players in the world. The best players in the world play in the MLL. I don't want to see the best players in the world play with chains on their wrists on offense and shock collars on their neck. And I want to see dynamism. I want to see athleticism. I want to see creativity in an All-Star game. And I got none of that. I was robbed of that. And so was everyone else that watched the game until the end, where a couple guys were like, hey, we should probably try and win this and stop treating it like a scrimmage. And by the way, saying it's a scrimmage does not mean that I think the players didn't play their hardest. I absolutely do. You do traditionally play very hard in a scrimmage. It's a proving point. This was a proving ground for Team USA. They used the MLL for it. And I hope they got what they wanted because I'm American. I love Team USA. I love America. But the spectacle was not up to snuff and did not deserve to be in the called an All-Star game.
How do you compare the satisfaction of the experience of watching that scrimmage, as you call it, last night, with cheering for the U.S. men's national team who advanced from the group stage on the very same day despite losing 1-0 to Germany?
How do I compare, like, what, like, emotionally?
Yeah, the level of satisfaction that you're experiencing.
It's definitely much higher for soccer, the soccer match, for sure, and even though they lost. And I tweeted something like, I don't celebrate losses, just to be like, you know, a hard ass. But I can't compare the two. They're different things in my mind.
All right. Well, this isn't a soccer podcast, so we can get back to lacrosse. Yeah. So, all right. Here are my, like, I want to talk. Well, what would you prefer to talk about? The fastest shot competition or the actual play on the field over the course of the four quarters? Because we got to talk about both.
Let's talk about the play.
Okay, and then we'll save our All-Star or our fastest shot competition conversation for last. So, I have an opinion of this, but I will ask you. You can answer, and then I will give you mine. Who was the most impressive player on the field in your opinion last night, regardless of team?
Joe Walters.
Okay.
Joe Walters.
That was stupid. Like, I don't know why I asked that. Cause I wanted to say Peter Baum, but at the same time, I don't know how, like, I certainly don't want to subjugate or say that I didn't think somebody played, you know, whatever. Joe Walters played pretty well, although the accuracy competition was not his finest moment, but.
He hit a lot of pipes.
He did hit a lot of pipes. I was watching the game with my wife and she was very impressed by the amount of pipes that he hit. The thing that impressed me the most about Peter Baum was his display of, it's essentially exactly what, it's exactly what you liked from him coming out of college that wasn't apparent over Labor Day weekend tryouts last year, which is the unique combination of speed and strength in which he is a speed first player, but strong enough not to get pushed off his spots, combined with his ability to, it's basically so clear that he was a guy who started at playing midfield, played attack by necessity, and is now back to playing midfield with the additional arrows in his quiver of having played 2 years of attack. alongside some pretty good players like Jeff Ledwick and Ryan Walsh. And, I was just impressed by his ability to dodge defeat and score and run past guys, but be able to absorb their checks. Joe Walters, to me, I mean, first of all, I think that he is, and I've said this on this podcast, I've written this multiple times, among the most, and truthfully, here's another guy who, you know, to what degree he was a midfielder before Maryland, you know, I couldn't say. I think that he was pretty much a relatively stationary lefty shooter, coming out and then kind of demonstrated that in spades while at Terp. And then, you know, only in the last couple of years has really continued to flesh out his game and is now one of the best feeding midfielders, in all of lacrosse. And you know, my opinion is that, you know, he and Kyle Dixon both, and Kyle Dixon certainly hasn't shown it, nearly as much this MLL season, two guys that didn't even attend tryouts that would have, I think really, really potentially helped this U.S. national team. But like I said, remove themselves from the process. But Kyle, the more important thing is, what does it say about, and I know that you and I have differing opinions on this, what does it say about U.S. national team that each of us thought that the best player on the field isn't going to play for the U.S. national team?
Well, the U.S. guys, you know, they clearly had a, you know, I don't want to say, you know what, I'll say it. They had an axe over their heads the whole time. You know, there was a lot of guys that, you know, I don't mean to say that they played scared. They didn't play scared. You can't play lacrosse scared. That's how you get hurt. They played with trepidation, and guys passed up wide open looks that they would have taken 1,000 times out of 1,000 in the MLL and ate the shot to moving on back to X. They dodged a lot in the invert. They tried a lot of things that were clearly like coach's orders, like go do this, go do that. You have to do this. One of the other points that was made to me, by one of the guys that works for the Cannons, Chris Knoll, was down on the field. He does team ops. He said that the boxes were better run than anyone he's seen all season in the MLL or even in the last couple of years. And that killed a lot of transition opportunities. You know, there's a lot of ways you could like analyze the game. I think that Team USA played safe and possessive lacrosse even with a shot clock. And I think it was probably weird for them to do that because it fundamentally changes the way they've been playing the whole time in the league. You know, this whole team, with the exception of Fletcher, is all ML. I mean, and now Fletcher is MLL players that are primarily have experience just in the MLL. And you don't pass up open shots in the MLL with a 60-second shot clock. But the coaches of Team USA said, yes, you do. And that's what they did. And I think it hurt, a lot of what I wanted to see out of the game, which is creativity, dynamism, athleticism. It definitely, cut that there were like, what, 3 transition opportunities the entire game, and 2 of them were bumbled. You know, that's not good. And I think that if USA is going to play this very slow style against Canada and underestimate Canada's athleticism, it doesn't bode well.
Well, okay. See, now that's the thing that I would dispute. The first is that your point is well taken, that the MLL players were taken out of their comfort zone by trying to play a style game that isn't intuitive to the MLL. And the biggest thing is, it's the style of international lacrosse. International lacrosse is a very rare breed that most American lacrosse fans just aren't that familiar with because they only, you know, it only comes up at once every 4 years. And even then, being able to actually watch the games is a relatively rare occurrence. But the biggest thing is that it is a 2-half field game. There's not a lot of transition. The stalling opportunities are so abundant that you see really long possessions. And so the thing that's important, and I've talked to a bunch of guys, some of whom got caught, some of whom are still on the team, that understand this, is the knowledge of the international rules is a very instrumental part of being successful as Team USA. And I think that there was some belief that the guys that were on the team in 2010 that got cut would have been helpful because the coaching staff doesn't have, and you know, certainly don't want to overstate it because Coach Pastrmalo was, you know, a member of multiple world teams and So was Kevin Cease, and you know, there have obviously been there's been a lot of education done among the coaching staff to the rules because of, and it was demonstrated so clearly by the way that they played in the that All-Star game last night. But I think that, you know, the and this is fundamental toward the argument or complaint that you would have about the exhibition that was on display and whether or not it was the spectacle that it should have been, because it was a preparatory opportunity for Team USA and a very important one that they needed to take seriously, and clearly they did, and demonstrated a lot of what they were supposed to be doing based on what the coaching staff's expectations are, based on what the coaching staff believes is going to be most successful at the World Games level. And so, you know, again, it's a bit of a trying to serve two masters problem for that. But the thing that, you know, and what's interesting to me is, to what degree was last night's game for the coaching staff an evaluation tool versus an opportunity to gain experience with the players that they know are going to make the team? And I'll phrase that to you this way. Is there anybody that you saw last night that is such a lock to make the team that it would surprise you if he got cut, or is such a lock to be cut that it would surprise you if he made the team?
I want to address a lot of that point, but I'm going to say that guys that I would be shocked if they didn't make it, I'd be shocked if Schwartzman didn't make it. I think that's...
Do you base that more on his level of play, or the circumstantial evidence that he played considerably more than the other two goalies?
No, I think his level of play was better. He had a better save percentage than the other two guys too. So it's not like, and he's better at outletting the ball. Burke threw, Burke's on the other team, but, Galloway and Adams didn't do well in the clear, and the clear was weird for Team USA. They ran a bunch of them, and one of them was, no middies back, which was to get like the easy dump, which I thought was weird. And then in the first half, they ran a weak ride where they didn't press. And then the second half was a lot of pressing and jumping at the middle of the field. I thought that was pretty interesting from Team USA, trying to take away. I mean, it was pretty obvious, like, beginning of the game, like, Team USA's objective on defense was like, take away the middle of the field. You know, and when I watch them play, I kind of go, okay, how's that going to work against Canada? Is this what they're going to do against Canada? You know, like, it's like, you know, trying to ready Goliath for a battle against David. Do you know what I mean? Like, I always watch them and go, what's Canada going to do to that? And the one thing I think that they didn't have an answer for was, no one from Team MLL really pressed that left side, like Junior will. Coming up strong with his left hand, and I don't know who they would put on him. And Evans didn't play. It might be Evans. I hope it's not Durkin. I think Durkin played very poorly last night. Danowski ate him for breakfast at least three times, and two of those times were goals. So I think that was tough. I don't think now Bernhardt had a ton of ground balls. He had like six or seven, something like that. But he also gave the ball away three times. So as far as the U.S. valuing possession, like, I think that one of the problems with that, by the way, and this goes back to your previous point, of the slowness and possession nature of the international game. Shouldn't you be the one time you give the ball away in possession is when you're not relaxed, when you're tense, when the pressure is on you. That's when you give the ball away and you're not comfortable. And I feel like there was no comfort in what Team USA was doing last night. And I think, if that's your goal, is to get guys comfortable in roles and run your stuff, like, that, you didn't achieve that goal last night. That didn't happen. You know what I mean? The only guy that was comfortable was Rob Pinnell, because no one told him not to do anything. He was like the only guy that was like, oh yeah, you want me to do that? No, I think I'm just going to go to cage. Yeah, no. I think I'm just going to do that. You know, he was the guy that kind of like, not defied the coaches, but like clearly like did what he wanted to do out there. Regardless of what the defense did, and it resulted in, you know, the game winning goal, two assists, but also like seven shots, and a bunch of those shots were not great. So if you look at how that shakes out versus who's going to get cut and picked, I mean, I had a list last night. A bunch of people were asking me, who I thought would get cut, who I thought would make it. A lot of people are curious to see if Lavelle makes it. I thought he did all right. He had two great shots that were, you know.
Well, hold on. Let me jump in before you keep going for too long, because the point that you were making earlier is one that I want to address specifically, and it is that it's funny that, you know, I asked you that question and you went immediately to the defensive end, because my opinion, and I wrote this yesterday, is that I wouldn't be surprised if all eight long poles that are currently on the roster make it to Denver. I just think that it's a team that might carry eight long poles, and if they do cut one, I would be stunned if it's one of the close defensemen, because there are three clear long sticks on this team, LSMs, that being Hartzell can play down low, but ultimately, with this team is almost assuredly a long stick midi. Karolunas and Bernhardt, and of those, I would say that Bernhardt, is probably the least likely given the time that he missed because of his injury issues over the course of, you know, that 6 month window of time.
Yeah.
In the offseason, and to that point, you know, you made the point about his, you know, the tantalizing nature of his ability to gain possession juxtaposed against his inability to keep possession at times, and, you know, how comfortable does that make you as a coach? But, you know, on the flip side, I think that the decisions that are going to need to be made, obviously the goalie position, which we kind of discussed, in that, you know, Schwartzman, and I tweeted this last night, it looks like a lock, and it's kind of surprising to me just from the perspective of, you know, I think coming out of the tryouts, he was, I think that there were people that were surprised that he made it through to the champion challenge stage of the game. I think a champion challenge, he upticked his stock a little bit, and then obviously is playing the best among any contender over the course of this MLL season. So that's the point there, but I do agree with your assessment that I think it's to the point that he would be a surprise if he weren't on the team. But I would include part of my reason for saying that as the circumstantial evidence of the fact that obviously he played a full half last night and neither of the other two goalies did. And then the only other guys that I would put into that mix are Matt Abbott and Paul Rabel. And I've kind of felt that way since before the process even started. I thought both guys, well, and ultimately this is the point that I want to make as you talk about the offensive players. And my overarching point is, I thought the first quarter was illustrated, or was the hallmark of the first quarter was missed shots. It was the most significant thing I took away. Then in the second and third quarter, I started to feel a little bit more of what you were talking about, which is the passed up looks and otherwise missed opportunities to generate something. And I thought that to that end, the offensive players that I would have felt were most on the bubble heading into yesterday were the guys that in brief glimpses showed the most, and it made the decision as to whether or not to keep them more difficult. And I would include in that primarily Thule and Lawson, and then to varying degrees Lavelle and maybe even Mundorf. I mean, if Mundorf were to get cut, I'm quite certain that a heavy emphasis on why would be his injury issues. And, you know, we talked about this a little bit last week, you know, when we had him on the podcast and whatever else. But aside from that, I mean, I think Pinnell probably deserves to make the team, and I've kind of expected that he would all along. You know, he was the leading scorer in the game last night, but it wasn't to the point where he was so dominant that I felt like he is an absolute lock to make the team. Do you disagree with that?
No, and part of my point was that of him doing whatever he wanted is that, you know, Pinnell, there are times where he looks like he can beat anybody, and then he makes a decision and you're like, why did you do that? You know, I also think an interesting guy to talk about is Crotty. Cause, you know, Crotty went in for Pinnell. That's not a coincidence. They both play on the same team in the MLL, and they don't exactly play well together. That's not like, it's not great analysis to say that. That's like kind of everyone knows that. And I thought Crotty only came alive when he was at that attack spot, cause he got a couple runs at midfield earlier on. And I don't know what you do with all these attackmen. I don't know what you do with them all. I think a guy that, you know, the guy that I champion, everyone, I was in the press box and, people were like, oh man, your guy's not playing well tonight. And I was like, what are you talking about? They're like, McCready's, it's your boy. Does not looking good tonight. And I'm just like, Yeah. I mean, I think he's a good player. He passed up the most wide open look out of anybody on the entire field. It was ridiculous. I believe in the second quarter. But then there are guys that like, and I brought up the defensive end because that's kind of the end I was watching more, readily than the offensive end. And this kind of goes back to like not knowing who's wearing what number. And you had a tweet at me. It was like, you can tell by the way they run, and you're absolutely right. Like once you tweeted that, I was like, oh yeah, I should probably just watch that. And that helped a lot with a lot of guys. But when you do that, you also realize a lot of guys are kind of the same player.
Hold on. Who has the most distinctive running style of the U.S. team players?
Fletcher.
I would agree. Who had the second most distinctive running style of all of the players, like including Team MLL, which this is significant because there were two guys on Team MLL wearing the same number, which kind of gives away the point that I'm going to make.
Oh, like Baum and Law wearing 15?
Well, yeah. Okay, so no, I actually disagree. There were a couple of times when I confused them for each other. I was like, why did he ride all the way back to the defensive end? No, Jeremy Sieverts by far has the second most distinctive running style.
Yes. That's a good call. It's a good call. Yeah. How do you think Snyder did for Team USA?
Drew Snyder?
Yeah.
Not as well as he did in the Labor Day tryouts when I thought he was the best player in attendance.
Yeah, he kind of disappeared for a lot of the game.
But he also really hasn't been playing very well this MLL season either.
No. And you could put that up to like Denver sharing the ball a lot more, but I don't think that's true.
Well, okay, so here's my thing, and this is why I've loved Drew Snyder's game from that period, basically all of last summer, through Labor Day, is that, okay, so he is a very, very good set shooter from up top, and as a second midfielder on most lines, that is a really valuable skill. And then combined with that, I thought he did a really nice job of making the decision to either re-dodge shoot or move the ball at a tremendously high rate last summer. I just feel like the ball's dying in his stick a little bit too much right now. And then add to that I thought he was maybe the most pure American midfielder playing last summer in the amount of defense he played, the credibility of the defense that he played, and the value that he brought between the boxes. And I just haven't seen very much of that in volume. And I'll admit that a part of that might be the product of not watching the Outlaws play as much as some other teams, but I don't know. What do you think? I mean, am I way off base in that analysis?
No, I think that role, his role has changed in Denver too. You know, last year, a lot of people, he got a lot of great runs, and I think Sieverts has taken a lot of those, and the ball has gone down to the attack a lot more in Denver, and taken away a lot of his dodging, and other teams aren't sliding as much to guys like, Sieverts, and even though they should be, because his shot is finally back after not having it, fallen for the first couple games. I think, and also he doesn't have to go back on D because, you know, they acquired Cam Flint, and ironically Cam Flint is going to do what Drew Snyder does for Team USA for Canada. So I think that playing, and I think their playing styles are fairly similar. Obviously Flint's a little more defensive than Snyder is, but I think that the way they play is very, very similar in the way that they get in guys' faces. They get back, they hustle. They both have that like high work rate, you know? Other guy, you know, like
that high work rate comment is a total product of how much soccer you've been watching. Well, basically how much soccer you watch all the time, but particularly over the last 2 weeks.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thanks for calling me out on that. I really appreciate it. Thanks. It's great.
Well, I mean, it's not like it's an insult. It's just,
no, I know. I want to talk about one guy that I think is on the bubble that I think should make it for Team USA.
Is that Dorn?
No, I thought Jeff Reynolds played awesome last night.
Really?
Yes. I think he stood a lot of those MLL guys up right on the perimeter. They all tried to dodge on him and couldn't get past him. I thought he played really well, defended the alley really well, defended the middle of the field really well. Stood guys up. It's not easy to stand guys up in the MLL.
And this compliment that you're paying him is not hollow, because you've been pretty tough on Jeff Reynolds over the course of the last little bit here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And a lot of that is probably due to the, you know, he had a concussion, and hasn't, you know, played well, and the Bayhawks haven't shown well. And it's hard to say, you know, guys are playing well when their team's not playing well. Do you know what I mean? Like that's a hard.
I absolutely know what you mean. And I feel like I think a lot of guys are suffering from that. I mean, I think it's definitely one of the most substantial things that's coloring people's opinion of Brendan Mundorf. I think he is playing, showing healthier than people are giving him credit for. He is producing, but his team isn't winning. So it's as if a lot of that is kind of null. Like, I agree with his assessment that he gave us last week, which is that he was getting used to, or almost waiting for his coaching staff to get used to what he is good at doing. And that is what's starting to happen. So I think that there will be people who say that he is getting healthier when in fact he isn't. He's been about this healthy, and he probably won't get completely healthy until he's able to take another extended rest in the off season. But at the same time, I think that the credit isn't being given to how well he's playing because his team is 2-6 or whatever they are.
Quick, name the Team USA soccer player that reminds you of right before they made cuts.
I mean,
come on, say it.
It's Landon Donovan.
Yeah.
Do you think that Brendan Mundorf would be a guest analyst for ESPNU during the World Games if he doesn't make this team?
No. But then again, no one thought that about Landon, and then he did it. I'm not comparing the two. I think Mundorf's probably a billion times tougher than Landy Cakes, personally. But you know, it's an interesting point to make about Mundorf, especially because he didn't play this past week. And on the call earlier this week with all the coaches, you know, we asked about a lot of injuries with Chesapeake, and he, you know, Cottle was like, well, you know, Mundorf didn't play, and you know, he said this whole thing about how if I treat all the guys like they're my son, if I wouldn't let my son play, I wouldn't let them play, and all that stuff. And then all of a sudden, it's like Mundorf's like tearing up Team USA camp, and he's one of the best players on the field, like, and he didn't play last week. And then on the other side of that coin, you have Stan Ross with a bunch of guys in this game that are already banged up. Like Crowley's already banged up, you know, Queener's already banged up, and they're playing in this game. And there's no, like, he can't hold them out because he has no replacements, you know, and he can't afford to lose the game. I mean, neither can Chesapeake clearly, but they still lost. They were much more competitive, obviously, but I mean, look at how the MLL is bleeding into the World Games. And that's really what, like, that's my main goal writing the column, for later today is looking at how the rosters and the breakdown of who plays and who doesn't play for Team USA and Team Canada, you know, actually affects the league a lot. And this 2 week break that's coming up in 2 weeks at the end of, you know, this little sojourn here down to Denver, that's really going to affect a ton of teams, and the teams that have the least amount of guys are going to benefit the most. And I think that like teams like Rochester are like, yeah, this World Games thing, this is going to be awesome.
Well, and don't undersell how significant the additional wear and tear that guys will take after playing 8 games in 12 days in Denver at altitude, and then the team that wins going after it pretty hard on Saturday night, some of whom will probably at least in some capacity try to play on Sunday if they're playing in Denver. It's going to have a significant residual impact. The World Games, and this is obvious, but the World Games is going to have a significant residual impact on the remainder of the season once it's done. It's not just who's going to have the most guys missing games.
Yeah, and that's kind of my point. I can't believe they put a game on Sunday after the World Games. Like, that's crazy. That doesn't make any sense to me. Like,
well, all the international participants that are not traveling, that are staying for the gold medal game on Saturday night, will probably attend that game on Sunday. So,
how good do you think that game's going to be? It's Florida Denver, by the way.
Yeah,
how
I know.
Do you think it's going to be? It's going to be awful.
Okay. Wow, you were really glass half empty today, bud.
Oh, yeah. Well, I am. I'm a glass half empty guy. Come on.
All right, well,
steal another line from a Simmons podcast. Thanks. Let's keep busting that out.
Let's talk about our boy Zach Dorn, who we wanted to get on the podcast, but unfortunately he is traveling back to Chicago today. Representing the Windy City, with a 116-mile-an-hour shot. And, Kyle, this is something that we can attack from multiple angles. But the first point that I want to make is, like, out of everything that MLL does, the fastest shot record is something that should be fun, because ultimately, being able to shoot the hard, being able to shoot the ball really hard is a frivolity. Like, everybody will tell you that. And I compare it to the long drive competitions that exist around the country that you never see a PGA Tour member win. And it's because the guys who focus on it at potentially the expense of the rest of their game. And that's not to say that Zach Dorn isn't a good player, because in the wake of his winning this, a lot has come out about how much lacrosse he plays, and you know, that's certainly obviously to his credit, but obviously this is a guy who focuses a lot of time and energy on being able to shoot hard. And I say this because my understanding of the player reaction and coach reaction and people around the league reaction to a quote-unquote fan off the street winning this is, like, anger. And it's so mind-boggling to me that... can you provide me with a little bit more perspective as to why that's the reaction?
Let's look at two things. Aside from the USA Germany game, another big event yesterday was the NBA draft, right?
Yes, that was a big event.
What was one of the things you took away from that?
I'm a Cavs fan, so I will take away Joel Embiid's injury and hoping that he doesn't end up becoming Hakeem Olajuwon, more so than anything else. And then also take away the fact that Andrew Wiggins, the fact that he plays the same position as LeBron James and is basically a skinnier version of him, with a less refined basketball game, makes me a little nervous about it. But I think that the answer to the question for 98% of sports fans who weren't looking at that event through the lens of their particular NBA franchise will take away the Isaiah Austin moment as the most significant thing that happened last night.
Right. Right. And that involved who? The player and the commissioner. Put that against the commissioner having a guy, basically, if you look at it from a player's perspective, okay? I'm not as unsympathetic as I was last night. I was very unsympathetic last night. But
unsympathetic to whom?
The players.
Okay.
But I'm very, just bear with me here. You're out there playing hard. You're here, you know, doing a fastest shot thing, you know, and a lot of fastest shot is about, like, you know, who's the man? Who's got the cannon? You know, it's a lot of one-upsmanship, right? That's basically the entire point of the contest. And then at the end, you finish and you don't, you know, a lot of guys maybe didn't think they did very well. Manley thought he had it in the bag, right? Then they bring this kid up and you're like, oh, this is going to be cute. He's going to shoot like 95 and it's going to be, you know, the crowd's going to cheer. And then he blows you away. And there's no warning. Like, no one told these guys, no one told us in the press box that this kid could shoot anything. Like,
they said on the broadcast, and I'm pretty sure that it was, Evan talking throughout the stadium that he shot 107 in qualifying.
Okay, well, we don't get that feed in the press box because Austin is ancient, and we're in a Winnebago of death at the top of the Stone Stadium. So it would have been nice to do it somewhere else, I'm just saying. So Transpo is like, you know, Isaiah Austin being offered the job with the NBA after he finishes his degree. He can't play because he has Marfan syndrome, and he could die if he plays basketball again. That's a great story. That makes the commissioner look great. The MLO, you know, comparison to that is this contest, bring a fan on that should be like, oh, this would be great. This would be, you know, celebrated. And this is fun. This is like cute. And like at the same time, there's a lot of players who are like, yo, that kid took a check away from us. Like, we don't get paid a lot to play in this league, and we got something taken, an opportunity taken away from us by someone off the street. Now, I don't mean that in a mean way to Zach Dorn. Like, all credit to him. And the point has been made. You know, people have been like, oh, they're faking it. It's like, how do you fake 116 on a radar gun? Do you have a technician able to fix that for you? That's not realistic. Okay, that's not realistic. 116 is very, very high. very, very fast, broke the record, obviously. No one would expect a fan to do that. And I think the problem with the entire thing and how it shook out is that it looked, you know, and I've been corrected on this. Brett Queener went on Twitter, was like, you're wrong. Cause I said no one congratulated him afterwards. And by the way, no participants congratulated him afterwards, but you know, Queener was like, yeah, high fived him. And you know, so my apologies on that. I shouldn't have said that, but it looked to me like they were pretty bitter about that. And you know, the source of their ire was not Dorn or the fact that a kid came on and did this. It's to Gross, who was just standing there smiling like, this is great. And it's not great. You know,
why is it not great?
The kid shot hard, because it takes it away from the players.
But the kid shot harder than anybody else did. So this is my point is so this is basically the way the competition has been set up. It is the opportunity to set the world record for the hardest lacrosse shot. It is considered to be the only valid place to do so. Is it fair that the competition is only available to MLL players if there are people who are not MLL players that would be able to set the Guinness hardest lacrosse shot record?
It's the MLL All-Star game, isn't it? Is it the lacrosse All-Star game?
That's my point as well.
And my answer to your question is no.
But my point is that the MLL All-Star game is the venue for the opportunity to set the world's records hardest lacrosse shot. Like Mike Burney, you know, is on record video wise as having shot 115 miles an hour after Mike Sawyer shot 114 at last year's MLL All-Star game. Mike Burney is still in college. I'm not really sure of the mechanisms of how this comes to be, but like, that's not necessarily considered as bona fide of a shot as the MLL All-Star game's shot. So to me, it makes perfect sense to have a player that, or not a player, you know, somebody who is not a player have an opportunity to get into this game. And I will make the comparison, or I will address the claim that it is delegitimizing this way. The NBA is seriously considering, from what I've read, opening up the slam dunk contest to non-NBA participants, non-NBA players, meaning that there is conversation about creating a basically similar qualification process to be able to compete against NBA players at the NBA All-Star game in the slam dunk competition. Now, I don't know whether or not it's going to happen, and until it does, it's hard to say that it's not in some degree delegitimizing of the MLL because they're trailblazing in the fact that they're doing this in comparison to the, you know, four other major sports. But I come back to the point that, like, if the goal of this is to derive knowledge of who has the hardest shot, then closing it to the player pool of MLL All-Stars seems artificial.
I really wish you had a beep button, but you don't. So I'm going to try and say this nicely. Okay, you're a first-time fan. You're watching the game. You watch the MLL All-Star game. They go to this fastest shot thing. You're like, oh, this will be interesting. See all these guys shoot really hard. And then you see a dude who basically just comes out of the stands and not beats them by one, destroys them and beats the record by two. What are you saying to yourself watching this game going, huh, some guy out of the stands just beat all these players. How hard can this game be? How hard can this be? Can't be that hard. Looks easy.
That's kind of the same argument that I made when Duke qualified for the national championship game in 2007, which was, how can a team have its season completely suspended, go through all this turmoil, and then come back the following year and advance to the national championship game? There should be some damage done by losing half of your season. And I think that there are some people who made the same claim about the Saints with their Bountygate suspensions. I don't know. It's just something you got to deal with. And I think that that's my point. Like, it's a specialized skill that isn't necessarily related to your capacity for playing lacrosse to the degree that you should be an MLL player. Like, if you're a fan that can't realize that just because you have the hardest shot means that you should be, that this game is easy to play, I don't know. Like, you're beyond the reach of what I'm trying to convince you of.
Right, but my whole point and my whole ire for this game, and this is my main point for almost everything that I'm going to address and have addressed, is that this should be a spectacle. This should be.
And that was nothing more than the biggest spectacle that you could have assumed, that you could have created. Yes, it was. That's exactly what it was.
Cheap. I disagree. I did not enjoy it. It's not fun. Like, and the funny thing is, like, if we knew about it going in and there was drama surrounding it, there was tension surrounding it, we could make that into a story. We could make that into something, you know, like you're talking about. But the fact is, there's no lead up to this. This dude qualified 2 hours before. There was no, you know, if you look at the media guide, there's a tiny blurb about, like, hey, if you're the fastest shot when you come, like, you can compete against the pros, like, blah, blah, blah. And it's funny that, like, I mean, obviously the TV guys have more information than us to know that he shot 107 in qualifying. We didn't know that, obviously, going in, even though we were in the stadium, like, an hour and 2 hours before. But there's no lead up to that. And all of a sudden it turns from, I just tweeted this morning, it turns from a, you know, for lack of a better term, WTF moment into a, you know, like it should be triumphant. Like you're saying, it should be great. It should be, you know, spectacle, but it turns into like, this is dumb. It turns into like confusion because no one knows what's going on. You know, players are like walking around like, what? What happened? Meanwhile, by the way, postscript to this, like while this is all happening, Team USA is on the other side of the field, like doing ground ball drills. Probably the best juxtaposition of exactly what I'm talking about this entire time. I don't think that was the right thing to do to the players on second thought. You know, first thought I was like, this is just crazy that they did this and this is like a massive screw job. Like this is like, it looked really staged and like really not real. And then you realize like, I mean, it's not like it's impossible for someone to do that, right? You would think it would be, but it's not. I mean, it's not like, it's like you said, it's a singular part of the skill, you know, and a lot of playing lacrosse. And there's a lot of guys who can shoot super hard that aren't in the aren't in the MLL. Like, one of the hardest shots I've ever seen in a game was Kyle Stiefel from Lehigh against Maryland. Hardest shot I think I've ever seen in a game live was him. And he's not the MLL. You know, like there's guys like that can fire the ball 100 plus like all the time, but they're not in the MLL.
Absolutely. So what's the point?
My point is there was no setup. There was no, like, the players had no warning that this was going to happen. You know, they're just out there competing, thinking they're competing against themselves. You know, they didn't know this was going to happen.
And how is that? I mean, like,
that matters. It matters, dude.
No, I'm not saying it doesn't matter. I'm just saying, how is that possible? And whose fault is that? Because I knew that there was going to be a fan in the competition.
I'm not going to point fingers, though. I know whose fault it is.
I knew that there was going to be a fan in the competition.
That's great. I don't think anyone else did. And the TV told you that, right?
No. I'm saying like the TV has told me that by showing the qualifying shots over the course of the last like two months.
What?
This whole thing has been a process. Like this has been something that has been on websites and on broadcasts.
All right, I haven't seen it. They must take that out of the feed. Like I watch a lot of taped games. I don't watch a lot of live stuff, so maybe that's why. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Okay.
I literally have no idea what you're talking about.
All right. So. Well, then there are two things to bring this in for landing. So the first is, do you think that 116 will be broken?
When? Ever?
I mean, let's just put a like random capstone of like within the next 3 years, like in the next three All-Star games.
Sure.
Okay. So is it that big of a deal that a fan set the record?
And the thing is that it's not that someone did it, it's the way it happened that I'm upset with.
Is this, you know? Is the fact that somebody broke the hardest shot record the end of hashtag Grippy Ballgate?
Is it the end?
Yeah, because I was thinking that like if the hardest shot was 107, like we would have been able to fan the flames of Grippy Ballgate substantially.
Well, that's the best argument for it being rigged, by the way. Didn't you tweet out that the Gerby ball adds like 10 miles an hour and someone just shot 131 or something like that?
Yes, I did.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, the effects of the Gerby ball aren't just for shooting. So, you know, it's still a shame that they're not using it, but we can cry about the Gerby ball all day. It's not going to do anything because no one else cares except for us and the players, you know, like it's funny, but like, you know, they're not making the ball anymore. You're not going to get the ball. There's not like 400 Gerby balls sitting in a warehouse somewhere. They're all gone.
Well, I mean, that was what they said about the synthetic NBA ball until it wasn't true anymore.
Well, I hope that this isn't true, but you know, this isn't, you're right. It's not going to fan the flames that someone broke it. So good.
That's Alexi.
Oh, I'm exhausted.
Really took a lot out of you, huh?
This has been an emotional journey.
Well, and to that end, we didn't even talk about last week's games. What do you take away? I mean, there were so many guys that it seemed like didn't play because they were, not so many guys, but there were a handful of guys that didn't play.
Yeah, I mean, that Ohio-Boston game was everything as advertised. It was an awesome game. I really thought Ohio was going to win. And then, Boston pulled it out in OT. Will Manny, you know, podcast blessing, you know, friend of the pod, gets the OT winner, feed from Rabel, who had his first monster game of the year. 8 games in, you know, and I don't think he played that well last night, personally.
No, I don't think he played super well, but I also think that he was probably, as much as anybody else, one of those guys that was just like, all right, I'm going to do exactly what's asked of me.
He did tweet out or put on Instagram something about off to play an exhibition game against Team MLL or something that upset a lot of people. I thought it was funny, but instead of calling it the All-Star game, he called it an exhibition.
Yes, I've realized why you thought it was funny.
Well, you know, okay. You didn't laugh, so give me some indication.
Well, I didn't laugh because I had the mute on because I didn't want to breathe directly into the microphone.
That's fine.
All right. I think that means that we're done for this week, Kyle.
Thank God.
Enjoy your weekend of MLL action.
I will try. Inside the Cross Podcast.